ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Mr. Miller Show, as the New York Times refers to me. Thanks for tuning in. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. I have been called the Ann Coulter of the left.
Yeah, so, you have.
See, I'm going too far now. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. Oh, what a weekend. Do I have stories? Does Mama have stories for you?
Travel stories?
StephanieMiller.com. I got stories like you wouldn't believe. I didn't even tell you, Chris.
No, I haven't talked to you.
Fresh and new, so you wouldn't question the freshness of my stories.
Oh, boy.
As you would not question my personal freshness as you normally do.
Well,
StephanieMiller.com, the website you can email us all, their executive producer, Chris Lavoy, voice deity, Jim Ward, associate producer, Rebecca Taylor, or me, Stephanie Miller.
It's hard to question your personal freshness when you're 3,000 miles away.
That's why we didn't get the scratch and sniff Skype.
Yeah.
Because, Good morning, Rebecca Taylor. What up, ho? Funny you should mention that. There was almost an incident in Minnesota. In Minneapolis.
Did you
Mama
have some
was
trouble?
A little bit of trouble you might be hearing about.
Trouble in River City.
The Blue State Ball was Saturday night. It was the bash of all bashes, may I just say.
You had a bit of a potty mouth on you. The video is up at StephanieMiller.com.
Oh, dear. Does the video show the incident? There was just call it a pole dancing incident that could have ended in mayhem and legal action at. Fortunately, I believe our station owner, Janet Roberts, saved me from. Let's just say there was some ringing. Me and Ed Schultz and Mike Malloy and Tom Hartman and Bill Press and the whole gang was there, as you know. And so that's always a party. And there was some drinking and dancing. And at the end of my little speech, I attempted a pole dancing maneuver on a light thing. And I almost brought the light thing down on an entire... I could have actually put the Minnesota station out of business. I think if I had taken out the whole first row of listeners...
But I
was saved from that by the quick thinking and quick reflexes of the fine station owner, the fine American, Janet Robert, from KTNF, Minneapolis.
Yes. Oh, God.
Remember I was trying to emulate that girl that sued because she had a pole dancing injury at a gym here? Because, you know, Manhattan's expensive. So I was thinking maybe I could make a little extra scratch.
By pole dancing?
Yes. Yeah, it didn't.
At scores.
It didn't work out well.
Oh man, seeing you pole dance is about as hot as watching Martha Stewart pole dance.
It didn't work well.
No,
it didn't really.
You almost took down the set.
Stephanie,
but then Mike Malloy offered to have me a strip at the end of his speech, and I did briefly.
Oh sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, here's a funny story. Mike Malloy. We cut a rug. We did a little dancing at the Blue State Ball.
How did Mrs. Malloy feel about this?
I was having a grand time till I got outdanced by a 7-year-old. I almost had to throw that biatch into a jukebox. You know, don't be coming into my dance space like that. Anyway, so Mike Malloy and I were dancing, and he was telling me later on in the evening, there was somebody, you know, like bumping and grinding it behind him, like into his ass, and he assumed, oh, it's me.
Well, who else would it be?
Yes. He's like, oh, it's Stephanie. And so, because, you know, when you think drunken liberal slut, you think, you know.
Stephanie Miller.
So
I just
he reached around, apparently, and grabbed a handful of ass.
Yeah.
And realized he suddenly was like, that's not Stephanie's ass.
It was a dude.
And it was apparently a lister. No, it was a lister. Yeah, it was Ed Schultz. No, it wasn't.
At least it wasn't that 7-year-old.
Yeah, no, it was a listener. And he's like, oh, my God, she's serious. I thought it was Stephanie goofing around. But I just love the fact that, you know, every liberal male host knows what my ass feels like.
No.
They're like, oh, no, that's not Stephanie's ass. I mean, I've felt that at every event for the last 5 years. That's not the, yeah. So he just assumed if it was somebody slutty, it was me, but it was not.
Computer says no.
It was some other drunken liberal slut at the Blue State Bash.
So you didn't make out with every single progressive host there, like Snooki on Jersey Shore?
I am the Snooki of progressive radio, that's for sure. Anyway, where do I start? The Blue State Bash made big news.
It made big news?
Let me tell you, this.
God.
For being a drunken, liberal, single, childless loser, my life is kind of exciting. Only because I know Ed Schultz. Let's just start with that.
Right.
So, I don't know if you haven't seen, it made a lot of news this weekend. Huffington Post,
In
Progress, Ed Schultz made some comments that got back to the White House. So the White House calls while we're in the car. So I got
you were in the car with him?
The whole conversation between Ed Schultz and Robert Gibbs. I was like, oh.
And there was the F word. There was
awesome.
There was the S word. The F word was thrown around. I read about this. Oh, my God.
By the way, Wendy Schultz at this point is a handler for Ed Schultz and me. I have no idea how to print my airline ticket. Wendy has to do everything for us. God bless that woman. I love her. She's the best thing that's ever happened to the world. Okay, so... Oh, so Ed Schultz gave a barn burner of a speech. And you know I've always been a suck-up to Ed Schultz long before he got a TV show, Chris. You can confirm this.
Right.
I'm proud of him. I think that's an amazing story from Fargo to 30 Rock. It says a lot about our side of the aisle. You
absolutely.
Know? Anyway, but so he gave a barn burner of a speech. And he talked about a conversation that was not off the record, but it was he had Robert Gibbs on his show two nights in a row last week.
Mm-hmm.
And in the phone conversation they had before the second one, he told Robert Gibbs he was full of and the White House is losing their base. He said, does the president understand he's losing his base? And apparently Robert Gibbs dropped an F-bomb.
Oh.
Anyway, so as these things do, it went on the internet immediately.
Sure.
As is wont to do, as my pole dancing incident will likely.
I didn't watch to the end of that
thank
video.
Thank God, Ed Schultz saved me from getting the most publicity. Thank God. My pole dancing incident was overshadowed by Ed Schultz pissing off the White House. If I could take you behind the scenes, you have to understand how impressive this was to me. Because you know if the White House press secretary had called me, Chris, you know I would have gone doo-doo in my pants.
Yeah, you were. That's what you would have said.
I would have been like, yeah, sorry, and then, yeah.
Yeah.
And that would have been all they heard. I would have been like, I'm sorry. I won't do it again.
Yeah, he would have totally capitulated.
Exactly. I moved to New York as Ed Schultz told me to.
Right.
I have no independent principles of my own. Anyway, God bless this man. He did not back down. I mean, it just to even be there for that, because obviously, a lot of us are really pissed about a lot of things right now and have, you know, some strong passions about how what we all fought so hard to get here and to get Obama into the White House and all of that. So, Ed Schultz, clearly, everybody knows, very passionate about health care. And I think we can all at this point agree that we bungled this so far, you know. And so, I mean, I don't know how it's all going to come out, but we'll get to that today. But anyway, so Robert Gibbs apparently was called for comment. None too happy. And so, anyway, Ed Schultz, Ed and Wendy are in the back seat of the car. We're going to the airport. And he's like, Robert Gibbs is calling. He's texting me. And so then it went back and forth because Ed goes, I get a lot of prank texts. Is this really you? Oh, man. But I'm telling you. So, I mean, but they went at it for like 20 minutes. And
like
he did not
yelling
back
at each
down.
Other? Yelling at
What's
each other?
He went to why a mandate is bad for the American people if, you know, you're not going to give meaningful competition to the insurance companies. A lot of the stuff we've been talking about.
Right.
But it was amazing. It's like, I'm going to get fired. I'm like, no, you're not. No, you're not.
No, he's going to become more of a hero.
Yes.
Because, yes, the president is losing his base. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so it was kind of an exciting weekend.
Huh.
All in all, I must say.
Good.
Oh. Okay, here's an I'm not sure if I should mention this, but I just can't. It's too good.
What?
I guess the invitation I had to turn down to go to the Blue State Bowl.
What?
Bobby Kennedy asked me to come falconing and play pond ice hockey.
What? Wait a minute. You turned down Hal Sparks, and then you had to turn down Robert Kennedy Jr.?
Yes. Yes, he invited me to bring my dogs to the country and go falconing.
What?
Do you know what falconing is?
I think a falcon lands on your arm or something.
Well, a falcon lands on your arm, and then you send it off to go get a mouse or something, and it brings it back to you, or I don't know.
I can't skate. I'm too spazzy, but it was so Kennedy-esque, and I was like, I would love to, but I'm on the way to Minneapolis. I just that was the most bizarre invitation I ever gotten. I loved it. I was like,
did he call you?
Mm-hmm.
He called you and you talked to him.
Yes.
Oh my God.
We've been trying to get together, have a cup of coffee, whatever. We've never met. We've talked to each other. You know,
right.
We've just never. You know, I'm a fan of his. He's a fan of our show. And anyway,
huh.
Falconing. I had to pass up falconing
with a Kennedy.
Exactly. Oh, I did go out with Hal Sparks Friday night, though.
Oh, good. Did you get drunk?
How'd that go?
Oh, he doesn't drink.
No.
Did you guys
Who
do
knew?
It?
I took him to a wine bar. I'm like, you don't drink?
He's told you that before many times.
I know, it's what he said.
Oh, Stephanie, you just don't
pay
attention.
As my nephew says, that's why they call it talk radio. They don't call it listen radio.
Oh, you don't pay attention to anybody.
What'd you say? See what I did there. So, yeah, I'm like, do you want to go out for a milkshake? He's like, don't be patronizing.
Yeah, no. He can sit there and drink water while you drink wine. He's a big boy.
Here's the thing that you cannot go on a date with Hal Sparks. He is, he's beyond a chick magnet.
The
waitress was just, she was embarrassing herself, for God's sakes. And then when we were saying goodbye, I'm like, bye, y'all, thanks so much. I'm Stephanie. This is Helen. I'm like, it's Hal Sparks. And she goes, I know.
Oh, my God.
She was embarrassing. She was, like, all over him. I'm like, oh, please.
Well, you could have been all over him, but you weren't.
One of my friends says, does he have a girlfriend? I'm like, I get the impression he has 1,000. I could be wrong.
No, but he's not attached. He's not attached. That's why he's going so heavily for you. And you just keep rejecting him.
Is not.
Yes.
That's not right.
So, change the subject.
We'll take this up again on Wednesday. If Hal and I get any steamier on the Hal cam, it's going to be that we're going to be the Pamela and Tommy, apparently, as Progressive Radio.
Yeah.
All right, so, oh, yes, what else did we, oh, so we got big press this weekend, besides my pole dancing incident and the Ed Schultz in the White House incident. What was I going to say? Oh, I got mentioned in the New York Times.
Right.
As Mr. Miller.
Yes.
Let's see, what does it say here? It's about the Air America going under. Two other top progressive hosts, Ed Schultz and Stephanie Miller, never worked at Air America, deciding on other routes to local stations, reassuring listener Mr. Miller's.
Yep. Mr. Miller's what?
Executive producer Chris LaVoy wrote on Twitter Friday morning, we're not affected by the shutdown of Air America. He suggested it could actually benefit the Stephanie Miller show because it could pick up some new stations, time slots, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, look at you.
They got my name right. I got so many emails saying, oh, my God, you were quoted in the New York Times. Oh, cool.
And also, everybody send me this. Thank you. Yeah. Lily Tomlin, God bless her, in the New Time magazine mentions
Stephanie Miller.
Show is her favorite radio show.
Absolutely. And you know what is even, you know what's so cool? She called me a mischief monkey.
Ah! She says, they ask her at Radio Days, Stephanie Miller as commentator, comic, mama, and her irreverent two-man band of merry-making mischief monkeys. Get me laughing every morning. All right. Thank you, Lily. Thank you.
Oh, I love that woman.
You know, they don't
give
those Pulitzer Prizes and Emmys and Tonys and Oscars for nothing. Those people got taste.
Yes.
All right. We will also get to my hate letter from a right-winger after the break.
Oh, boy.
He thinks someone needs to send me to a rehabilitation center.
A rehabilitation center?
Yes, for alcoholics. Is there such a thing? Rebecca, check into rehabilitation centers.
Even if there isn't, we'll send you there.
19 minutes after the hour. All right. Back with all that, we've got a big, big show. Rude Pundit, Eric Bowler from Media Matters, and also Greg Palast with some great stuff on the Supreme Court ruling as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Kid tested. John Conyers approved. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Half of the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Rude Pundit coming up in just a couple of minutes. Some great, great, rude stuff this week.
Yeah.
All right. My hate letter today is from someone named Slavin.
Flavin?
Slavin Cam. That's that's his handle.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know what he didn't, no other name. And it's a question, Chris. Okay. Rehabilitation Center for Alcoholics?
What?
Have you ever noticed that the people that hate me, the worst spellers in the world? I don't know why.
It's because they pound in anger on their keyboards.
Yes.
And so
exactly. You can tell there's like spittle on the screen, and they're just furiously trying to get in the big box.
And they
the really dumb ones can't even get out of the subject line. They're not really because their wife Lurleen did not tell them how to get in the big box.
That's right.
Sometimes I get the whole hate letter just in the subject line. All right. Slavin says, Stephanie, I have a massage for you. Oh, thank you. I'm really stressed out. I've been traveling. Thank you. Not a good speller, Chris.
Mm-mm.
I think he meant message.
I think so, too.
November is coming, and you will be out of business like Air America. No.
Confused says no.
But thanks for your concern. You can continue to insult American people and call them stupid because they are disagree with your communist agenda.
Hmm?
Because they are disagree with my communist agenda. Try to keep up, Chris.
Okay.
But in November, you will show you who is stupid. Is this eighth grade or lower now? You're stupid, Slavin. Stupid head. You, stupid. You're stupid.
Did he? Oh, he didn't call you a stupid head.
Distortion, lies, and chit. What's chit? C-H-I-T? What's a, like a chit, like a...
No, I think he misspelled an obscenity.
Oh!
Be careful what you...
I thought, a chit is a...
A marker that you...
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just didn't know how he meant it, but I think you're right. I think it's yet another misspelling. Okay, my bad.
Yeah.
Is your agenda, but wake up, idiot. And if you have any dignity left, leave the... Well, clearly I don't.
No.
Listen to the show. Leave Sarah Palin alone. Apparently, us bastards are lucky that she even performs for us, Chris. She is worth more than you faking drinking prostitute. I'm not sure what I'm faking, but I'm a faking drinking prostitute.
Well, you did pole dance this weekend.
That's true. I don't think I've ever or not admitted the drinking and the prostitute. I just don't know what he means by the faking. She's worth more than you faking drinking prostitute. You are worthless. The only things coming from your mouth is alcohol and slops.
Slops?
I don't know what that refers to either.
Pig feed?
Okay. Hmm?
Like pig feed? Slop?
I guess. Oh, maybe that's what he means. Okay, and then in caps now, don't you have anybody to put you in some rehabilitation center for alcoholics?
Computer says no.
Once
apparently
again.
Apparently I don't. Apparently you guys don't even care enough about me to put me in a rehabilitation center.
Well, we would if we knew what one in was.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Slavin, for your concern. He seems concerned about me. And someone should put me in a rehabilitation center. Okay, David, echoing a lot of the thoughts we heard from listeners in Minnesota and Ed Schultz this week, frustration out there. Steph, the time has come to rebuild President Obama. We talked about rebuilding him like the Bionic Man. Oh, do we still have any bionic sound effects? We can rebuild him. We can make him better, stronger, faster. Here's another one talking about Shaft. As you know, he needs to be more left and less right, or as I would like to say, more Shaft and less Urkel.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Yes, we can.
Who's the black president that's a sex machine to all the Dems?
Black.
Damn right.
Who is the man that would risk his neck for his brother, man?
Good humor.
Black.
Can you do it?
First, tell me how people are responding to President Obama.
Oh, he's getting great reviews so far. 60% overall approval of the job he's doing.
Who's the cat that won't come out?
You know.
The message you're all about.
Come on.
Right on. You see, this cat Obama is a bad mother. But I'm talking about Obama.
I think everybody understood that was a joke.
Thank you, David. Good idea. He's still Shaft, Chris. We just need to rebuild him.
He sounded very good in his speech on Friday in Ohio.
And David Plouffe, that's a great move. David,
yes.
To put him in charge. We just had David on a couple of weeks ago to put him in charge. You know, what I'm hoping, Chris, is they awoke the sleeping giant that elected Obama now. With this, I hope the Massachusetts thing is a wake-up call to all of us. Frankly, and we're going to tell you what we need to do next. And so is the Rude Pundit, who has some great stuff on that this week. 29 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You weren't a cheerleader.
I wore short skirts and I slept with all the football players. What else would you call it?
One in college. Oh, is the mic on? 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12. The phone number toll free from anywhere. Oh, by the way, so Ed and Wendy Schultz and I were all on the same plane.
Right.
You know, flying back from Minneapolis.
Right, yeah.
And well, you know, and Mike Malloy and Tom Hartman and Bill Press were also there. And I thought, wouldn't, if that plane went down, wouldn't that be the biggest conspiracy theory?
Yeah, Jim would have a field day with that.
On the internet. I mean, come on. Then we were thinking maybe we could use the publicity. Maybe we should fake our own death. And then, huh?
You see, no.
All right, just a thought. Actually, and then you know what the biggest conspiracy theory would be?
What?
Randy Rhodes did it.
Sure.
Because she was the only one not there this weekend. She's usually there, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, you wouldn't have had a body of work to draw from to earn profits. You know, radio isn't like that. You need to produce new product every day in order to make money.
Well, you know who would go to jail immediately.
Who?
The guy who owns the show who's trying to kill me for the life insurance
yes,
money.
Absolutely.
He'd just be like, I'm sorry, Ed Schultz and Perez, Mike Malloy, Tom Hartman, which has had to be collateral damage. I'm sorry.
He has insurance policies out on all of them, doesn't he?
They wouldn't even have a trial. He'd just immediately go to
all
right. Bye-bye now.
Won't pass go.
Bye-bye then.
Won't collect $200. Just straight to jail.
All right, that is rude. Hey, speaking of rude.
Lee Pobbitt, the rude pundit. Pundit.
Yeah, Wendy Schultz suggested we travel separately, like the royal family. I'm like the royal corgi, though. Mm. Hello, Lee Papa. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, one of you should always be left behind, just in case.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, the president's cabinet during the...
Yeah, of course.
Or Waylon Jennings, you know, you need one cricket to live.
That would have been like Leonard Skinner. Listen, if we'd all been on the going back to New York, that's... All right. Lee Papa, some of the greatest, rudest stuff ever. I love your view of the future in the wake of last week's Supreme Court ruling. First, they took our bowl games. Now they'll get our members of Congress. Hey, maybe if they're willing to pass a couple of disclosure laws, member of Congress can all be honest about whose whores they are. And I love you did even fake ads for them, which is nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I figure let me get in there early because there's a ton of money to be made now.
Yes. Think of the logo business. Senator Orrin Hatch brought to you by the good people at Merck. Merck, because Vioxx isn't the only thing we make that'll you up. That's a good one. Senator Mitch McConnell brought to you by the executives at R.J. Reynolds. R.J. Reynolds, can you believe how much we've gotten away with? Senator Lisa Murkowski is brought to you by the shareholders of ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil, suck our pipeline and suck it good, America. That's some mud. Yeah, those, at least it would be honest.
Yes, rude. I think so. It's other people have suggested NASCAR-like jackets for them, and I
suggested like the Joe Lieberman. We make him wear an Aetna thong, a little teeny tiny one to cover his teeny tiny manhood.
That's a truly frightening proposition. But you could also tattoo their foreheads, and that would be great too.
And I love your the ad for yourself. You were brought to us by Trojan and Jim Beam. So that's
well. There's no advertisement for ecstasy. So
I don't. You know what? I need to meet the rude parents someday. That's what I need to do.
Oh, Mom just rolls her eyes.
Oh, I don't know what he does for a living. and I love your because we what a suck ass week we had last week, right?
It was truly an awful week. I mean, you know, it's better than a punch in the groin or living in Haiti, but you know, either way, it was still a pretty bad week.
Thank you for putting it in perspective. And you say because anger must be released, you Massachusetts, not just for Brown's election, but for voting for Coakley in the primary, and you because you already have a health care program in your state, which made it a lot easier to not give up about the rest of the nation. You, White House and DSE, for not seeing this coming. Good points all.
Well, thank you. And I think articulately put.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. You know, but you made a good point, too. While we're bemoaning the loss of the super-duper majority, we have to remember that so many Senate Democratic in the caucus are Weasley... Which means exactly we never really had it.
No, and you know Lieberman was already putting out signs that he was gonna bail again on Harry Reid. I don't think we can go into this thinking that after all of the negotiations were done that the reconciliation bill was gonna actually get voted on. That I think was hopeful thinking too.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time Harry Reid thought he had his 60, somebody would come along and screw it up.
Well, even but you're right. Who didn't see that coming with Lieberman? It's like, oh, please. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think as, Howard Feynman may have put it best, Rudy, said, Obama gambled his capital or gave it away to Max Baucus. you know, while he negotiated, quote unquote, with six Republicans for how many months?
Right. And you know, and now we can look back on it and say, what an, if you were a Republican, what a masterful strategy to sit there and pretend you're going to negotiate, to keep putting this off and putting this off. It's actually kind of a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And you make the great points about it. Grayson had the message, right? Life and death. That would have required a bill that was clear in its objective instead of whatever mutant cluster of a thing is. Pardon me, out of whatever committee or negotiating group is trying to bribe someone into voting. And then you point out that Republican, who was it that said George Bush, or Howard Dean said, George Bush would have had health care by now.
Oh.
You say if Republicans had wanted universal health care, you would have seen commercials with heartless insurance agents stabbing babies and drinking their blood. You would have seen ads with desperate laid off all men offering to people for quarters so they could afford their insulin. You're absolutely right.
Oh, you'd have had Democrats begging to co-sponsor the bill. They'd have been so scared of what would happen if they didn't join the healthcare bandwagon. You know, and it's just there's this moral cowardice about the way in which Democrats have approached issues. It's like the McCain-Feingold bill being overturned. All right, it's awful, and we know that there's going to be this downpour, this deluge of corporate money coming in, but McCain-Feingold was a sieve. At best, it was a thong. It wasn't really there. There wasn't much there to begin with. It's like
it was Rude Pundit's father's condom that broke.
Yes, yes. Wait, what?
Huh?
What?
Oh no!
I'm just saying. You said you were brought to us by Trojan and Jim Beam. I'm just saying.
I know, but I always thought I was planned.
You're not a mistake to me, Rude.
Oh, thank you. I've already.
I have you on purpose every week.
Oh, thank you. I've already decided I need to kill Hal Sparks from what I've heard this morning.
Uh-oh.
No, nothing happened. I
would be more hoping for the threesome, so.
But, you know, you say exactly where I am at, and that's, you know, we got to fight. Same thing Ed Schultz was talking about in Minnesota, too. You know, it's not time to lie down. You write, buck up once again, mother. It's flee, fight, or roll over and get. And the Rude Pundit's not ready to flee, and he prefers to do the thing. And I agree with you. You know, it's, but see, my point is that, you know, I think we don't turn against the president. You make yourself heard loudly, but get behind him.
Well,
you know?
and don't be such cowards. I mean, you know, I had another post last week of, you know, saying that so many people who voted for Obama are now turning on Obama and it's mainly the independent voters who are always, you know, kind of wimps about the whole thing. Independence that broke for Obama broke against the Democrat in Massachusetts, and it's like, no, don't you get it? If you want what you voted for a year ago, you have to have the courage of your convictions.
Yeah, Frank Rich had a great piece about it. I mean, I think that you know, none of us on our side can try to, I think, spin the fact that this was bungled, that the message wasn't clear on health care. I mean, you know, maybe I've watched American President too many times, Rude, but, like, I want him to, you know, throw it out and go for single payer or go for, you know, at least the bill with reconciliation, you know? I mean, it's just, I think, look, you've tried the bipartisanship for a year now.
Yeah, you go for the principle. You go for what for the big goal. If you want universal health care, go for universal health care. At least then you fall down on a principle. But again, like, you know, Ed Schultz Gibbs, you get the base behind you.
Right. Right. Maybe that's my fantasy Wednesday night for the State of the Union. It's that scene of the American president where, you know, throws out all the weaselly compromises and goes for the principle, and that you're absolutely right. That's what the American people voted for.
Yeah.
You know, year ago they were hugely behind health care with a strong public option, and you know, I think you're right. We've all been frustrated by these deals and having to, you know, buy off Ben Nelson and God knows what else and try to please Olympia Snow and Joe Lieberman.
But you know, the other thing that happened is that I don't think it's just that the Congress has screwed it up. I think the Democrats in Congress have screwed it up. The president has screwed it up. But I don't want to take away from the fact that people that voted for Obama have now gotten scared, and real change is scary. But that's where Obama comes in and needs to say, no, it's okay. You know, we went up in the plane. Let let's jump and pull the parachute. Chances are it's going to open.
Mm-hmm. And you have a great posting about you know, this new Scott Horton's new report about potential murder and cover up of the three detainees at Gitmo. I mean, you've said it before. The Obama administration's failure to investigate and prosecute the crimes of the Bush administration will lead to its downfall. You want to establish moral authority to change the tone in Washington, then adhere to some damn moral code. The laws of the land are a good place to start.
Yeah, and again, this is one of those, if you stand on a principle, you will have people behind you. And it also, and another point that I think that a lot of people on the left are saying is, you haven't made the Republicans own the Bush administration. And yes, we can be cynical and say, well, one reason you can't do that is because Democrats and a lot of Democrats enabled it, but you can still tie Republican equals Bush.
Well, and you, as you write, I mean, it's a great analogy, actually, but, you know, how much more of this it can come out, but that we can ignore? You're talking about it's like hanging out with a friend and going deep and deeper and deeper into the layers of porn. Starts out with the normal stuff, and then yeah, you end up with a, well, as you write, a dude with flipper arms and Down syndrome, a quadruple amputee tranny. And then it's like, when do we say enough that you're sick, dude? That's what we can't. That's too much.
Yeah. And at what point do we do that with all of the things that continuously come out with torture before finally we say, wow, this really, we murdered innocent people? Does anybody have qualms about that? Is it?
But
just
you point out it's more
brown?
Of this, oh, we don't want to wreck this magical bipartisanship, and oh, we have to look forward, not backward. I mean, you know, where has that gotten us?
Right, and you know what? But you can also manipulate that, and the way to manipulate that is say, okay, we're going to look forward, but when we go forward, do you want Bush's policies again? Is that what you want going forward?
Well, you say the same thing. You know, I think Howard Feynman was trying to say Obama squandered his first year in office, as you say, on a snipe hunt for bipartisanship. You know, everything he did nearly had a goal of luring Republicans into some kind of coalition. And here's a guess the quote to end our segment. Who said a year ago, Rude, Republicans have nothing right now, which means they have nothing to lose by trying to drag Obama into their pit of... They'll smile and say it was a good conversation, but they're waiting in the back halls of the Capitol to shiv Obama and laugh while he bleeds try to force Americans back into their crooked arms. Who said that, Rude?
I don't know. God, it sounds like me, but I was
Rude
probably...
Rude Pundit said it a year ago! It's the psychic
drunk.
Rude Pundit!
I was probably drunk on Jim Beam.
Yes!
Which has a way of making you even more psychic, my friend.
Well, thank you.
All right. Rude Pundit, the website is rudepundit.blogspot.com. Calm.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Rude. Great stuff this week. See you next week, honey.
See ya.
All right. There he goes. See, he's not a mistake on our show.
No.
Like he implies he was for his parents. 47 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God. That's like my favorite show ever.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Minutes after the hour. Trace in Minneapolis. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Trace.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, honey. How you doing?
I haven't seen you in hours.
You were at the Blue State Ball,
yes,
were you?
I met you at the Blue State Ball. I told you how put out I was that Jim Wallace was the official pastor of the Stephanie Miller Show, and I wasn't the official progressive Bible study teacher of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hmm.
There you go. You have your bling, sir.
I have my ding. We're good.
All right. Thank you, honey.
Now all you have to do, Steph, is you got to go on that website.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go on Studies in Grace. Put the wine box away for a short time this afternoon.
All right. I need a little hair of the dog.
StudiesinGrace.org. StudiesinGrace.org.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Oh, what? There was a technical malfunction there.
Yeah, oops. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Oh, we also have Bonnie. Bonnie was also there at the Blue State Bash.
Hey, Bonnie.
Hi.
How are
you? I'm great. All I was trying to do was send you an email, and I'm so illiterate in emails, I ended up calling you, and here you are. But I saw you.
There I am. You see how that still works? You punch some numbers, and then there's someone's voice there, magically.
It was magic. But I never realized how klutzy you really are until I saw you Saturday night.
Yes.
I thought it was an act, and a bunch
yes.
of my friends
were... No, I really am that spazzy. I almost pulled down a light. What was it? It was like a light pole.
A light pole. We were trying to figure out what the heck you were doing. I guessed pole dance.
Yeah, it was a failed attempt at pole dancing.
But I'm proud of my myself because I guessed it. But we are concerned because now we realize how klutzy you really are.
I know.
Better care yourself.
I know. And I'm not, here's the problem, I'm not as big a drunk as I pretend to be. I am as spazzy as I say I am, though.
That's what we figured out Saturday.
Yes.
And a bunch of moms from Minnesota are worried about you.
All right. I'll try to dial it back. Thank you, moms from Minnesota.
I am not a drunk!
All right, but I am a spaz.
Yeah.
Oh, that was, that was a little... That's on my list of things not to do again at a radio station appearances.
There is a video going around on the interlinks of this girl who's really drunk at a wedding reception underneath a tent, and she starts pole dancing with one of the supports of the tent,
yes.
And she brings down the entire tent on the entire wedding party. The bride has a bloody nose because she got hit with something.
Rock on, sister. Mm-hmm. See, that makes me look better.
You feel her pain.
Mine was only a near disaster.
At least she didn't cause a bloody nose, as far as you know.
No. All right. Glad to see the president was in a fighting mood this weekend.
After the Massachusetts election, people in Washington were all in a tizzy, trying to figure out what this means for health reform. Is he weakened? Is he, how's he going to survive this?
So he has asked David Plouffe, whom we know.
Yes, we do.
Architect of his, because David Plouffe, a fighter. I like that he named his book Audacity to Win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, it wasn't just about hope and blah, blah, blah. They won.
Yes, they did.
They won, mother. Oh. So there.
Oh, dear.
Uh-huh. So they put put him in charge of the November congressional elections, which I think is a good start. He will oversee the House of Representatives, Senate, and governor's races after Obama ordered a review of the Democratic political operation. Yeah, do you think something went wrong there when you lose Ted Kennedy's seat? Do you think there might be something awry? David Axelrod said, we are turning the corner to a much more political season. We're going to evaluate what we need to do to get timely intelligence and early warning so we don't face situations like we did in Massachusetts. Here's what you might want to do. Listen to Ed Schultz once in a while because, you know, it's and a lot of us, you know, that have been screaming about this, that you know, that's what I don't get, Chris, that they don't seem to see. Is that they fully had the support of the American people a year ago.
Right.
It's this, you know, giving your capital away to Republicans who have been on record as saying they wanted you to fail and they're trying to break you. And we've spent a year, we've let them, you know, take control of the debate, put off this wall of lies. You know, now I'm reading stories in the LA Times, or excuse me, the New York Times this weekend, Chris, and it's like, you know, now there's people like, I think they were interviewing voters even in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Massachusetts is a wake-up call.
Yes.
People, some normal people are confused, and it is confusing. I mean, we do this every day, like you say, we marinate in this, and we get confused.
Yeah.
About what committee's doing what, and what the compromise is here, and what, you know, I mean, this has gone on so long, and I understand all legislation, and it is complicated, healthcare is complicated. But it is. It's gone on so long, and there's been so many capitulations and negotiations and deals that I think the regular, a lot of people don't understand it. You know, but like Ed Schultz was saying this weekend, they understand a mandate when there's no meaningful competition. It's giving the insurance companies 30 million new customers.
Absolutely.
Without, you know, and again, this is still part of what they're negotiating. You can't have the state-by-state exchanges. It doesn't work. You know, you have to force some meaningful competition if you're going to. I mean, I think a mandate has to be part of it, but it's anyway, the president.
You're running headlong into special interests and armies of lobbyists and partisan politics that's aimed at exploiting fears instead of getting things done. And then you've got ads that are scaring the bejesus out of everybody.
I mean, we'll get to Frank Rich's piece, but you know, I just think that it has been a failure on many fronts, and part of it is for the White House and the president to clearly articulate what needs to be in the bill and explain it to the everyday people. You know, I mean, I think he was saying, like, what does this mean for my taxes, for my family, for my, and I hopefully he will Wednesday. You know, I hope he'll take back this debate, the president.
We've gotten pretty far down the road. But, I've got to admit, we had a little bit of a buzzsaw this week.
A little bit. A little bit of a buzzsaw.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. A little bit.
Buzzsaw on the front of a pickup truck. Okay.
There are things that have to get done. This is our best chance to do it. We can't keep on putting this off.
By the way, one of the most hopeful things I've read this weekend, Chris, the White House signals it will fight back against GOP abuse of the filibuster.
Yes, I saw that. That's great.
I mean, that's something we've been talking about for a while, that people just don't understand, you know, that they have no shame. This is pure obstructionism. We will talk about that and much more. We have, Eric Bollard from Media Matters, co-hosting Right Wing World, next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Mm-hmm. 6 minutes after the hour, it is the Mr. Miller Show, according to the New York Times. What? At least they spelled Miller right. All right. StephanieMiller.com is the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LeBoy, voice deity Jim Ward, associate producer Rebecca Taylor, or me, Stephanie Miller.
Just call us the Merrymaking Mischief Monkeys.
Yeah. Oh, that's how Lily Tomlin refers to you in the New Time Magazine, where she cites
Stephanie Miller.
That's her favorite radio program.
That's right.
How about that?
What a weekend we've had.
Yeah.
Jim, I almost killed several people in Minnesota in a pole dancing mishap.
I heard. It was obviously not meant to be danced upon.
Apparently, I found that out the hard way.
There should have been a sticker or something on it saying, do not pole dance with.
And I had a dog sitter for Max and Fred here in New York, and Fred found out the hard way that you remotes are not edible. He consumed yet two more remotes. This is a good dog sitter, though. Apparently, she squished through his poo.
Oh.
Looking for the battery, and he apparently didn't eat it, so that was very good news.
Oh,
but that's a good
God.
Dog sitter that went through the poo.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, he was in a little bit of a snit, that Mama left.
How about leaving the remotes on top of the
Well, he's never done that before, Jim. That was a new one. Okay. That was a new one.
Can you maybe find a doggy hotel?
Hmm. Here's something else. Somebody sent me. Oh, this is good news for me. As you know, Chris, ever since I've moved here to Calcutta, my dogs just got Giardia or something that they've just gotten over. And now I get this breaking news. Dear Paws members, we want to alert you to a recent incident involving an off-leash dog and a rabid raccoon in Central Park.
Oh, no.
It occurred near the bridle path. Oh, I go there every day. Where a raccoon attacked an off-leash dog. The raccoon tested positive for rabies. Not a cause for panic. Only a few infected raccoons have been found in Central Park.
I don't understand the appeal of Manhattan. It's like the slums above Rio de Janeiro. Good God. What the hell did you move to, woman?
I thought I had escaped my critter trouble from Los Angeles, but no, I have gone headlong into more critter trouble.
Yes, but they have really tiny rat and roach infested apartments for millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah,
for a lot
boy,
of money.
That's appealing. So that's a draw.
There you go. All right.
And you might as well eat out because grocery shopping is just not an issue.
No, exercise and futility.
Yeah. Forget about it.
Forget about it. Right.
All right. Our good friend Eric Bollard from the Media Matters for America in the sidecar. Hello, Eric.
Good morning.
Good morning. I love how you guys were the first to point out, because I watched the Haiti concert, which was amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was Hope for Haiti Now, and this came as no surprise, but Fox, of course, the only network that didn't air it, right? Huh.
The Fox News, not only the only network, I mean, the obvious NBC, MSNBC, ABC. I mean, it was like on every possible conceivable cable channel. And there's Fox News doing, Karl Rove and Bill O'Reilly talking about how awful Democrats are. It's just amazing. I mean, they are world unto themselves. They have no, I don't know. I mean, they seem to have no conscience whatsoever.
No compassion.
Here's what they did. Let me give you the fun facts. Here's what they covered while everybody else was trying to help the people in Haiti. Bill O'Reilly aired segments about Sarah and Bristol Palin's body language during their Oprah interview. It was an interview with Glenn Beck about his first year at Fox News. That's big news. And a segment on the collapse of the far-left media. Hannity's broadcast included the interview with Karl Rove. They were just salivating, weren't they, over the Scott Brown election and whatever, the demise of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Yeah. unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, even George Bush cares about black people now. I mean, it's, you don't understand
but, you
my
know,
meaning.
It has matched Fox News' coverage of Haiti, which has been completely lackluster and is... You know, I've pointed out, you know, if a story doesn't have an RNC talking point, Fox News doesn't know what to do, and they couldn't care less.
Yep.
So if it doesn't have a partisan angle...
Yeah, it's like human suffering. How does that help us politically?
Yeah. I mean, 2004 tsunami, same thing. Fox News was like, what? What does it have to do with, you know, George Bush's agenda? So, you know, A, and also it just highlights that, I mean, their news organization is a joke. I mean, their entire foreign coverage is Afghanistan, Iraq, and Israel. I mean, that's it. They don't have people anywhere around the world. So they have no commitment to global journalism, and they obviously have no commitment to humanitarianism of any form.
Yep. Yep. All right, let's dive into the, this is all they've been doing is just taking their victory lap. I hope they enjoy their giddiness over the Massachusetts seat. Charles Krauthammer on the
paper. You're a member of the House, a Democratic member of the House. You saw what happened in Massachusetts. What do you do purely as a political calculation on health care? Walk away, approve the bill that the Senate has passed as a way to ram it through, or start over and negotiate with the Republicans for a compromise?
Yeah,
the
that's
answer
what we
I
need.
Would give, and the correct answer is walk away.
Oh.
Oh, well, I think we should do exactly what he says, don't you, Eric?
Well,
I think that's what we did. We didn't negotiate enough with Republicans.
What was that Gang of Six 3-month negotiation charade for?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Charles Krauthammer always offers the best advice for Democrats, and always has their best interests at heart.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of that over the weekend, and we're going to see more and more of it, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, it really is stunning. You're like, that's what got us here, is trying to negotiate with Republicans. Please.
Yeah, right. That's certainly you could certainly make that case.
All right, Charles Krauthammer again on the prepare.
You know, this is an amazing week. In Massachusetts, goes a Republican, health care dies, and the Supreme Court unshackles the First Amendment. It's the best week I've had since spring break in medical school, and I don't even remember it.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God. I can't imagine what Charles Krauthammer did on
spring break. Charles Krauthammer and doing popping wheelies in Fort Lauderdale.
That's why he's in a wheelchair.
Stop it.
Oh, Jim. Yeah, I was saying earlier, Eric, I hope that Massachusetts, you know, does wake up the sleeping giant that elected Obama. You know, let them take their victory laps, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one way of looking at it. And you know, Krauthammer is definitely right about the, you know, sort of the week from hell for progressives and Democrats. I mean, the Supreme Court ruling was pretty astounding. I don't think people really understand what it's going to mean. And then the Massachusetts. But, yeah, I mean, no, that's politics. I mean, if a crummy candidate runs a crummy campaign, you can lose anywhere. It's sort of politics 101, and, you know, it is what it is, and now the Democrats have to deal with it. But, you know, I have been struck by the media rhetoric. I mean, this basically idea that Obama should just sort of quit and not bother to show up because he's only got an 18-seat advantage in the U.S. Senate.
Right.
You know, I certainly didn't remember that when Bush lost control of the Senate in 2001 when Jeffords went independent. There just wasn't this sort of apocalyptic rhetoric from the press.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. That should be the message. You're the majority. Act like it for a change.
Democrats have trouble with that.
All right. And you knew that Bill O'Reilly was going to be all over this. Bill O'Reilly on Air America.
The Radical Radio Network Air America has announced it is all over. They're out of business. No surprise, since that operation was never successful.
Here's the interesting fun fact about that, Eric, being on Inside Radio. You know what show was really not successful? The Bill O'Reilly radio show. It was beaten regularly by Senator Al Franken's radio show.
Well, yeah, and as Media Matters have pointed out, I mean, the right wing loves to sort of chuckle at when, you know, liberal media does poorly. You know, newspaper subscribers, they're not, you know, they're turning their back on the New York Times because they're so liberal. I mean, if you look at the Washington Times, this is the ultimate welfare program. I mean, the Reverend Sun Myung-moon, who claims he is the son of God, has spent at least probably $2 or $3 billion on a money-losing newspaper. So it's always fun when O'Reilly and others lecture us about how the ideas work in the marketplace. I guess if someone wanted to, you know, support Air America to the tune of $2 or $3 billion, it would be on the air for the next three centuries.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
Well,
you know, it's funny.
We don't have those welfare queens on our side.
Right.
Yeah, right. You know, Eric, it's funny what Ed Schultz said to me this weekend, though, in Minneapolis. He was saying, you know, it's interesting how, of course, this was a one-day story, because believe me, the likes of Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity know that progressive radio is alive and well, and that most of us were not Air America, you know. So, I mean, and look, at even the people who worked at Air America will tell you it was a bad business model, and they made a lot of mistakes business-wise.
They did, yeah. But, no, right, of course, those voices that were, you know, that have been turned on via Air America, I mean, they're not going to be turned off. They're going to be around for years to come, and Air America proved that there is a market, and, you know, AM talk radio doesn't have to be 90% right-wing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Bill O'Reilly, you know, it's because the U.S. is moving radically to the right. That's what it is, Eric.
First, that the USA is moving to the right very quickly, and second, that Fox News is an honest enterprise. We gave Ms. Coakley the same amount of time we gave Mr. Brown, even though she lost. Americans have generally wised up about the media. You know when you're being conned. The attacks on Fox News by the left have failed. We are now dominating primetime TV news coverage in this country. We are dominating. And it's not about ideology. It's about fairness.
Wow, where do you even start?
He said Fox News gave as much time to Coakley as it did to Scott Brown?
Yes, he did.
Wow. I mean, you know, what Fox News did for Scott Brown, I'm afraid, is just a preview of what's to come. I mean, they have, you know, they have clearly become a purely political entity and are now in the king-making business. And, I mean, the incessant cheerleading for Scott Brown, allowing him to come on and fundraise on the eve of a special election, just smearing Coakley nonstop, and then fanatical celebrations. I mean, that's the recipe for Fox News. It's got... obviously got nothing to do with journalism, and I think raises some questions about, you know, in terms of campaign finance regulations.
Yep.
And this is no longer journalism. It's just obvious contributions to the GOP.
Yep, absolutely. Eric Bollert, stay in the sidecar from Media Matters. More right-wing world as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Highbrow, lowbrow, unibrow. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Eric Bollert, our buddy, our pal from Media Matters for America, in the right-wing world sidecar, as usual. You know, Eric, leave it to Glenn Beck to put his finger on the pulse of what America really needs now.
America, haven't you always wanted to see Bill O'Reilly as a 20-foot head in high definition?
Oh, God.
Oh. I apologize to any of you eating breakfast.
Oh, God. No, they're talking about the tour they're taking together, where, you know, some of their appearances are going to be beamed into movie theaters across the country. Yeah.
Eric, you must already have a ticket to that.
No, I was at the theater this weekend, and I saw the preview. And it's funny, they're sort of pitting him like they're going to debate each other, like O'Reilly versus Beck, like it's going to be sort of point counterpoint. So it's going to be like the right versus the crazier right.
Right.
Yes, Himmler debates Goebbels. Yeah, right, exactly. Wow.
So I don't know. I'll be curious how many people show up and stuff like that. I'll also be curious, like, how this isn't just going to be heated agreement for like an hour and a half. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Conflict sells tickets. I don't know what agreeing with each other will do.
Well, you know, hey, that's AM right-wing talk radio.
Well,
I mean, that's what they do.
You know,
yeah.
You know, Eric, many of us on the left think the president hasn't gotten angry enough about what the Republicans have been trying to do to him for a year, but Hannity already thinks he's an angry president.
I don't think the American people want an angry president. I think they wanted a president that sounded more centrist and more moderate.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. More centrist.
Oh,
how can he be more... if you've already moved to the right, how...
Yeah, where does it go?
You know, it's all this sort of criticism by... critique by media... theater criticism, like, okay, Obama's not angry enough, or he's... I mean, my gosh, Media Matters could find 20 headlines about how he's you know, he's not angry enough. He's not passionate enough. That's what the right wing has been claiming. He's too cool, right? He never shows his real passion. But now he's saying, you know, it's like this Goldilocks thing. Now, you know, he's too hot. He's not hot enough. Whatever he does, they're going to, you know, Hannity's just going to unload on him. So, but it is funny that the rhetoric for the last couple of weeks was he's just too cool. But now Hannity says, I guess he's a little too hot.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and this I threw up in my mouth a little bit. You know what a big supporter Sean Hannity always has been of Bill Clinton.
Give, I guess, Bill Clinton credit. He'll be shocked if he's watching this program to hear me say that. But he did pivot. He did change. He did move. You know, the era of big government is over. The end of welfare as we know it. There's been no tendency, no evidence that I have seen in Barack Obama's past or this first year in office that shows any signs of moderation.
Yes, he was always so supportive of Bill Clinton in every way, wasn't he, Eric? You remember that?
Oh, he was. And, you know, he was the first to, you know, call off impeachment and all that stuff. But, you know, obviously these are two different, completely different environments. I mean, Bill Clinton had the luxury of sort of pivoting and changing because there wasn't, a couple wars running. There wasn't this economy that was still on the brink, et cetera, et cetera. Barack Obama doesn't really have the luxury to do that now. And, of course, the largest joke is to, you know, that Sean Hannity ever supported anything Bill Clinton did.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But now he's going to use that, you know, going to try to use that against Barack Obama to show just how radical, you know, this new president really is.
Yes. Yeah. And their network runs on people that turned on Bill Clinton, like prostitute toe sucker Dick Morris and then Pat Cattell, the former Democratic pollster. Yeah.
Well, of course it's dead. It's been hanging there for a while, and I think that everybody but the president may know that it's as dead as it can be.
Steve?
And the only thing that they can hope is that they can get the Republicans to put some, you know, to get together and do a couple things in the insurance industry. This thing is gone. And the sooner they recognize it, the better.
Wow.
Yeah, it's...
And that's a Democrat, supposedly.
Yeah, right, a Fox Democrat.
Yeah, and really the Fox Democrat says, you know, the key to all this is just really sitting down with Republicans. I mean, that's really the thing I've just been pulling my hair out since the Massachusetts race. I mean, John King allowed, you know, Orrin Hatch this weekend to just say, you know, we were locked out of power. You know, those arrogant Democrats never reached out to us. I mean, again, the Democrats now say they wasted 3 months last summer, you know, quote unquote, you know, negotiating with Republicans. Republicans have adopted this completely radical and unprecedented idea of we're going to oppose everything the White House does, and the press just sort of pretends that it's normal, and that's what, you know, the parties that are out of power always do, and then they buy this line about, you know, how Republicans are actually dying to work with Obama if he would just reach out to him. I mean, it's maddening.
This is the kind of thing that Media Matters does so well, too, is just documenting what people say. Did you see Jim DeMint, the South Carolina Republican, trying to say he didn't say, I want health care to be Obama's Waterloo? You know, his quote exactly, if we're able to stop Obama on this, it'll be his Waterloo, it'll break him. So yesterday he said, I didn't really mean that. That's not what I really meant.
What? Well, then what?
He said, I did not want this to be the president's Waterloo, but pushing through a massive government takeover of the healthcare system was not a good idea. It's like,
right.
Oh, please.
And, you know, that Waterloo comment was months ago. I mean, that was the mindset. It was clearly a political calculus, as Jim DeMint put it so well. It was a you know, political strategy. It had nothing to do with whether health care reform was good or bad or the dollars or anything. It was straight politics, and the press has really let them get away with it. We've never seen a party of no like this ever. And the press just pretends like it's normal, and that's what's always happened. It's not. It's unprecedented, and it's radical, and Republicans have gotten away with it. There's no downside to it because the press let them slide.
It's that damn liberal media again.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, one more Fox note before you go, Eric. Remember that prince that Rudy Giuliani turned down his money after 9/11, the Saudi prince? He's endorsed Rupert Murdoch's son, James, to succeed the elder Murdoch when he retires. Apparently, he purchased a 7% stake in Fox now.
Well, I mean, this is the problem Rupert Murdoch has, because he's got all these different interests around the world, and so we have these conflicts. One is he's trying to push, you know, he himself and News Corp is trying to push sort of an environmental message and almost fighting global warming and climate change. And, of course, he's got Fox News, which is just trampling all over that and pretending it doesn't exist.
Yep.
And this Rudy Giuliani is another perfect example.
I know.
Hypocrisy.
Eric, we're out of time. We always love having you. We'll see you next time.
Talk to you soon.
All right, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You are not a jaguar.
She's a cougar.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Jim Ward, on the way to the bathroom, just walked by associate producer screener Rebecca Taylor and heard the most asked question of Stephanie Miller Show callers. Are you drunk, sir?
And apparently you replied in the affirmative. Yeah, drunk. You're nice about it?
Yes, I am. And then you go to the front of the line. All right, it is the Stephanie Miller Show, 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12 is the phone number. Friends, don't let friends dial drunk. Justin in Los Angeles, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Justin.
Hey, Steph. How are you guys doing?
Good. Go ahead.
I just want people to realize that this Supreme Court decision will allow for what I term political terrorism. And what I mean by that is actual terrorist organizations and rogue nations from around the world will now be able to form legal corporations in this country, handpick candidates, carpet bomb the landslide with money, and get these people voted in.
Mm-hmm. Justin, thank you. I was going to promote that. That's what Greg Palast is going to be talking about with us next hour. He wrote some great stuff about that. You know, where are all these tough on terror, you know, Republicans? Do you know what that means? What we've opened the floodgates to? You know, you're absolutely right.
The Bin Laden Corporation could determine who the next president is.
Why, Jim, what do you think of that brand new Bin Laden audio tape?
Yeah.
It is strange that he only does audio tapes now.
Audio
you think
tapes.
He's vain?
That sounds like
vain or dead.
Dead.
That's the new game show.
Yes,
vain or dead.
He's been dead for years.
Dead.
They obviously cobbled together bits and pieces of old speeches with the editing software you can get for a dollar. You know,
yeah. Yeah, you can make some pretty damn good edits with that really cheap for free editing software.
It's absurd. I mean, and they say, yeah, it kind of sounds like him. We think it's him. They know damn well if it's him or not. They have voice recognition software. They've had it for years. They could tell.
It sounds like that Michael Jackson, like, fake edit we did.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's just like with a hatchet. It's like, what? Yes, he said that.
I am doing well and I am strong. As you may already know, after my tour ended, I remain out of the country undergoing treatment for a dependency on children all over the world.
Yes, Osama bin Laden endorsed the failed attempt to blow up a U.S. airliner on Christmas Day and threatened new attacks. I know, Jim's going blah, blah, blah.
Yada, yada, yada. Yeah, if bin Laden had been behind that, it would have been a lot more effective.
Yeah, that's what a lot of officials say. There's no indication that he or his lieutenants had anything to do or even knew in advance. He's trying to continue to appear relevant. The one-minute message was explicit. It's threat of new attacks, government response, America's support for Israel, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, he's never said that before. Yeah, and the B-52s. Yeah.
I love the B-52s.
Dance this mess around.
I love this part. Analysts have long debated how much control bin Laden really has over various organizations and his group's names. I love the one analyst. He said, there's definitely communication. There's definitely a process of seeking approval and swearing allegiance, but I don't think they go to bin Laden every time they have a question. Imagine. Ring, ring, ring. Hello, I have a... Now, do I put the bomb closer to my scrotum, or... How many times have I told you, don't call me with everything?
You put the lime in the coconut and drink it all up.
And then dance this mess around.
Yes. I have some interesting news about the vote in Massachusetts.
Oh, you do? By all means.
Blackboxvoting.org, I believe it is. There were some things were tallied on those ES&S machines, some on the Diebold machines, but there were also some hand-counted votes. In the hand-counted locations, Martha Coakley won 51.12% to 47.77%, which is almost the mirror image of the Diebold results, those precincts that counted on the Diebold machines. So if they'd had exit polling, they might have been able to determine, wait a minute, the hand-counted ones were almost exactly like what the exit polls
are. It is strange
said.
We appear to have done away with exit polling altogether.
Uh-huh. Not the machines. Not the faulty machines. We've done away with exit polling, which makes the machines look bad.
Speaking of which, Jim, I have a... This is the hint is it's a Monday, I guess the quote thing, which enables me not to have to do any show prep. who said it was not a referendum on Barack Obama, who in every poll remains one of the most popular politicians in America. It was not a rejection of universal health care, which Massachusetts mandated with Scott Brown's state Senate vote in 2006. It was not a harbinger of a resurgent GOP whose numbers remain in the toilet. Brown had the good sense not to identify himself as a Republican in either his campaign advertising or his victory speech. Who said that?
Osama bin Laden.
No, Jim, he's dead. It was Frank Rich.
Oh,
in another fabulous column after the Massachusetts massacre.
Frank Rich, who will be on this very program on Wednesday morning.
Oh, hey. Well, I'll just read this back to him again.
All right.
Jim, who said, and yet Tuesday's special election was a dire omen for this White House. If the administration sticks to this trajectory, all bets are off for the political future of a president who rode into office blessed with more high hopes, goodwill, and serious promise than any in modern memory. Obama's 50% first anniversary approval rating matches not just Carter's, but Reagan's. Go ahead. Who said that?
Oh, boy. It's tough.
Richie Sambora.
No. Frank Rich. Okay.
Keith Richards.
Finally, who said still minor adjustments can't right what's wrong? Obama's plight has been unchanged for months. Neither in action nor in message is he in front of the anger roiling a country where high unemployment remains unchecked and spiraling foreclosures are demolishing the bedrock of the American dream of homeownership. The president is no longer seen as a savior, but as a captive of the interests who ginned up the mess and still profit hugely from it. Who said that?
Cliff Richard.
No. No Richards or Dicks of any kind. It was Frank Rich.
Hmm.
Who has a great, you got to read yesterday's piece after the Massachusetts massacre. I must say, Jim, Chris, that the camera is forward divided by, so hang on, I'm in my New York Times now from yesterday. You know who is saving America today?
Who?
Marie Mack.
And she's with?
She's somebody, a voter. Where's my fine American? Here we are. She's the owner of the Fishbowl, 69 years old.
The Fishbowl?
In New Hampshire.
Okay.
I think there are lessons, like Frank Rich says, to be learned from Massachusetts. She's just a voter in New Hampshire. She admits being thoroughly confused by the health care debate, because we've mucked it up. Mack said she was not necessarily against the health care bill, but the Democrats have done a bad job of selling the idea. They have to simplify it for the simple folks, she said. Thank you, Marie.
I think some of the people voting for and against it didn't know what it was about. It was just a mess.
Right, because, and Frank Rich points out, too, Jim, it's like we've been saying, there enough already with this bipartisan outreach and trying to, as I've mentioned a couple of times, Howard Feynman saying he gave his political capital away to Max Baucus.
We wasted a year trying to appease the, I would say Republicans, but some of the worst Republicans are Democrats.
Yep, I know, exactly. Frank Rich writes, the conviction that the game is fixed is nonpartisan. If the Tea Party right and populist left agree on anything, it's that a big bailed out banks have and will get away with murder while we pay the bill on credit cards with ever-rising fees.
Mm-hmm.
In a new Washington Post ABC News poll, 42% of Americans chose the economy as the country's most pressing concern. Only 5% picked terror, 2% Afghanistan. Obama has blundered not by positioning himself too far to the left, but by landing nowhere, frittering away his political capital, by being too vague, too slow, and too deferential to Congress. Then he talks about the Howard Feynman thing about talking about he turned his winnings over to Max Baucus. Worse, the master communicator in the White House still has not delivered a coherent message on his signature policy. He not only refused to signal his health care imperatives early on, but even now he, like congressional Democrats, has failed to explain clearly why and how reform relates to economic recovery, or for that matter, what he wants the final bill to contain. Sure, a president needs political wiggle room, as any legislative sausage is made, but Scott Brown could and did drive his truck through the wide, wobbly parameters set by Obama. It's this nebulousness, magnified by endless Senate versus House squabbling, that has allowed reform to be caricatured by its foes as an impenetrable Rube Goldberg monstrosity, a parody of deficit-ridden big government. Since most voters are understandably confused about what the bills contain, the opponents have been able to attribute any evil they want to Obamacare, from death panels to the death of Medicare, without fear of contradiction. It's not too late to rewrite that. It's too late to rewrite that history, but it may not be too late for White House decisiveness. This is what I hope we see Wednesday. Whatever happens now, good, bad, or ugly, must happen fast. Each day Washington spends dickering over health care is another day lost, while the election year economy, stupid, remains intractable for Americans who are suffering. His two principal economic policymakers, and Jim, you've been saying this forever, is Summers and Geithner should go. Mm-hmm. And he is starting to go more toward Volcker. I believe Ed Schultz made that prediction this weekend that I think I'm not sure. I think Summers may go, I think, and I hope so. I think that he absolutely needs to, like Jim, you were saying, you know, I think they have done the right thing to pull us out of the abyss, but these guys were too much part of how we got there in the first place.
Right. And we can't let these guys get away with it again, keep giving themselves bonuses while refusing to grant loans to people.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Part of the a huge problem with the economy right now. No one can get a loan to start a new business.
Right. And Ed and I were talking about this in the car. You know, when people say, oh, he should have focused on the economy. He did. He did the stimulus. It is working.
Yeah.
We're impatient. That's the problem, is we lost control of this health care debate. We should have explained how important this is to the economy. This mm-hmm. is part of it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a...
Well, some of us tried to.
Should have been Medicare for all. Should have been simple and... You know, so even the teabaggers couldn't be against it. Get your government hands off my Medicare. Oh, okay, I like that.
Yep. Frank Rich ends by saying it's become so easy to pin financial elitism on Democrats that the morning after Brown's victory, Republicans had the gall to accuse them of being the one party who bailed out the automakers and insurance companies. Never mind the Bush White House gave us the bank bailouts or that the GOP is even more in a hock than Democrats to corporate patrons.
Yeah.
The Obama administration is so overstocked with Goldman Sachs, blah, blah. Alumni so tainted by its backroom health care deals with pharmaceutical and insurance companies that conservative politicians, Brown included, can masquerade shamelessly as the populist alternative.
Yeah, Obama's the author of the bailout, and the Bush administration inherited 9/11. Okay, good.
Okay.
Nobody reads, so they'll never figure that out. Okay.
Exactly. Dave in Phoenix, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Dave.
Well, good morning, Stephanie. You know, I saw Bill Bennett on the TV yesterday, and he was asked about the demise of liberal radio. And so his explanation for the problem, he said, you know, they're kind of humorless. So, Stephanie, you know, if you work hard and you hone your craft, someday maybe you'll be as funny as Bill Bennett.
I can only be as funny as Bill Bennett. Yeah,
Bill Bennett, thank you for that, Dave. Bill Bennett's inadvertently funny.
Oh, my God. Listening to Bill Bennett's Morning in America show is like listening to paint dry.
Oh, God.
It's like sitting in a lecture. Good God.
They make NPR scintillating.
Yes.
Yeah. I get it, because we're humorless. That's what it is.
Uh-huh.
Oh, by the way, fine Americans at the New York Times wrote a piece. Chris, was it yesterday and today, I believe?
It was one of their blogs, I think, on Saturday.
No, this is from today. Haven't you gotten the latest from the New York Times?
The latest? What's the latest?
Yes, because they...
Extra.
Trust me, the people putting out the nonsense like Bill O'Reilly know that Air America is not liberal, not progressive radio.
Right.
Progressive radio is just fine. Thank you very much. The New York Times writes, the collapse of Air America on Thursday came across as a symbolic loss for those seeking an ideological counterweight to right-wing talk radio dominated by Rush Limbaugh, etc. But symbolic as it is, little more, given that pockets of progressive talk are flourishing.
Stephanie Miller.
Thank you. On the radio dial, despite Air America's misfortunes. It's, you know, they do a pretty good job. I mean, mm-hmm. they go to some... by the way, I think I was mentioning this, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, a lot of times people are going, oh, you shouldn't say anything bad about Air America. It's like the people that say the worst stuff about them are people that were at Air America.
That no longer work there. Absolutely.
Yes. Tom Hartman is quoted as saying he found Air America to be spectacularly incompetent at running a talk radio network and gaining an audience, and he left Air America last year.
Mm-hmm.
In interviews last week with a half a dozen former Air America employees cited similar complaints, namely that a series of owners and managers lack the necessary broadcasting business expertise. They spoke to what may be Air America's other enduring legacy, that political media from either side of the aisle is more successful when run as a business rather than as a crusade. Thank you, New York Times, for pointing out some of the... Oh, you know who they quote in here?
Who?
The guy that owns the show that's trying to...
Yes, I saw that.
The insurance money.
Yeah.
Ron Hartenbaum, they don't mention that he's the guy trying to kill me, but we all know.
Yes, we do.
manager for, I don't know, Mr. Hartman. Manager? He's not my manager. He's trying to kill me. Ms. Miller and other hosts. Oh, the New York Times finally identified me as Ms. Miller.
Oh, good for them.
As opposed to Mr. Miller, as they did yesterday.
Yeah.
Said that a number of progressive hosts have managed to stand out in recent years, thanks partly to the boost that Air America gave to the format. Mr. Hartenbaum said the format was more stable and healthier than it has ever been. Some fine Americans like John Scott from our San Francisco station and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
KPTK in the New York Times quoted as saying, most of your favorite shows come from a variety of sources, meaning the Air America closing had minimal impact. All right.
Right.
Thank you, people.
Unfortunately, the term Air America became like a catch-all phrase for progressive radio.
It became synonymous with progressive radio.
Right. And as someone said, it will be taught in Harvard Business School one day is how not to run a business.
Exactly.
They
thought they were doing a Hollywood movie instead of running radio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that being said, the Senate is better off for Senator Al Franken, and television is certainly better off for Rachel Maddow. So
absolutely.
They had some great, talented liberals. It's just they were not run as a radio business. So, all right. 48 minutes after the hour, much more to get to on the filibuster and where healthcare goes next as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Making right-wing wackos everywhere hurl. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show, 53 minutes after the hour. Greg Pallast coming up after the top of the hour with a great piece about the Supreme Court ruling and what that means for us. Barbara in Illinois, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hey, Barbara.
Oh, Barbara just hung up.
Shoot. Dan in Minneapolis. Hello, Dan.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
This is actually Dan from Sheboygan.
Sheboygan!
And I met you at the Blue State Bash. Yeah, yeah. I was calling for two reasons. First of all, I want to let you know that you guys put on a fantastic event, and I can't speak for all 1,000 people that were there, but I left with a real renewed sense of optimism, hope, encouragement, and I told your screener that I think probably everybody in that room would take a bullet for you and Ed Schultz and Tom Hartman, Mike Malloy.
Oh.
You guys were.
Oh, that's not necessary, but thank you.
You were so gracious and so warm, and it was encouraging, and I really appreciate it. And thank you to Janet Roberts. She's done a great thing, and she's got a great station. So
And I got to tell you, we had a brunch on Sunday morning, me and Ed Schultz and Janet Roberts and her wonderful husband, Bill, and Ron Hartenbaum, the guy that's trying to kill me for the insurance money. And let me tell you, progressive radio is only just getting started. So thank you, everybody, for coming out. Oh, he left already. Okay, then, fine. He'll take no further questions, Chris. Don't bother him. He's busy.
That's right, Mr. Miller.
All right. Do you think that was a Freudian slip, Jim? The New York Times referred to Chris as Mr. Miller's producer, apparently.
How are those hormone shots going?
I've always wanted to be the liberal Ann Coulter.
I just think they were listening to her that day she had strep throat.
Oh, that could be.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That could be.
That was a Stephanie Miller Show. Hand me a camel without the filters, thanks. Okay, that's good. Okay. Got any more lie I could gargle with?
All right. But he's right. You know, Ed Schultz gave a great pep talk, and this is not the time to lay down and die. This is the time to, you know, to get up and fight. The president we talked about over the weekend was saying he did run into it. The health care plan ran into a bit of a buzzsaw.
A bit of
he
a buzzsaw.
When you deal with 535 members of Congress, it's going to be a somewhat ugly process, not necessarily because each individual member is trying to do something wrong because they have different ideas, different interests. They're looking out for their constituents. A lot of times when you put it all together, it starts looking like a monstrosity. But, you know, he vowed to fight. He said, I didn't run for president to back down from these challenges. I love this part. He still even, does he have to say it, Jim, about working with Republicans? He said, we're going to keep working to get this done with Democrats, I hope with Republicans.
Whatever.
It's up to them.
Anyone who's willing to step up, because I'm not going to watch people get crushed by costs or denied the care they need by insurance company bureaucrats or partisan politics or special interest power in Washington. One of the things, Jim, we've been talking about a lot is this filibuster. That's where part of where I think we need to. I love the headline, White House signals it'll fight back against GOP abuse of the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican minority in the Senate has used and abused the practice of filibusters to obstruct the Democrats' agenda. The number of Senate cloture votes, and I don't think a lot of people even understand this. They require a supermajority of 60, more than doubled between the last Congress and this one. Last week, Vice President Biden said no democracy has survived needing a supermajority. Biden's communications director said when one looks at the soaring number of cloture votes required to do business in the Senate, double the numbers a decade ago, triple the numbers of 20 years ago, it raises a legitimate question of whether this power is being abused to protect the minority or merely to obstruct action and progress.
Mm-hmm.
David Axelrod said the Republican strategy in the Senate is to turn 50 into 60. In other words, no longer do you need a majority to carry the day in the Senate. You need 60 votes for everything because Republicans are filibustering every single bill.
Making the vice president even more useless.
Yep. We need to call that out. They need to explain to the American people whether throwing a wrench into everything at a time of national emergency is the appropriate policy. And I agree. I mean, that's part of it, Jim, where I'm saying, you know what? Until you change the rules, then pass parts of the parts that you need to with reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
So Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid apparently trying to salvage health care. Nancy Pelosi.
We're not in a big rush.
No.
Pause. Reflect upon what our possibilities are.
Yeah, thanks.
So, you know, some people pausing.
Yeah, some people without health insurance.
They don't have
why don't we pause while 45,000 more people die? You know, that's how we needed to impress the sense of urgency immediately. And, Jim, you were absolutely right. We should have said 45,000 people die every year without health insurance
should have been
and
in
Medicare
all the
for
ads.
All. Done.
Yep.
Senator Chuck Schumer.
There are lots of good things in the health care bill. And it makes sense to try and see if we can get some of those things done. But I think it cannot stand in the way of the number one focus, which should be jobs, the economy, and the middle class.
Yeah, well, first of all, we've already, you know, the president passed the stimulus. It is working. That's the first thing he addressed. Now we need to get health care done. We'll tell you how as we continue. And Greg Palast coming right up on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
After the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number toll free from anywhere. The Dow is up 13 points. Oh, Mama will be on the Joy Behar tonight. I just got this on CNN Headline News.
Sweet.
Sweet. It airs every hour for all night. I don't remember. What time is it on, Chris? It's on at...
9 Eastern? Is that
9?
Is it 9?
Right, and midnight. And 3 a.m. on the East Coast, and then 6 p.m., 9 p.m., and midnight on the West Coast. All right. StephanieMiller.com. This is the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris Lloyd, voice deity Jim Ward, associate producer Rebecca Taylor, or me, Stephanie Miller. Oh, we'll be talking about the Republican, South Carolina Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer. Did you hear this? He compared giving people government assistance to feeding stray animals.
Oh, wow.
He said, my grandmother was not a highly educated woman, but she told me as a small child to quit feeding stray animals. You know why? Because they breed. You're facilitating the problem if you give an animal or a person ample food supply. They will reproduce, especially ones that don't think too much further. So wow. that guy will be...
I'm sure he's sorry that his words were misinterpreted by oversensitive people.
Yes.
Yeah, that'll be his
and
semi-apology.
He apologizes if anyone was offended, including the
aforementioned stray animals.
Being fed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes. All right. You know, when you've got breaking news, you need a investigative news reporter on the horn, and that is Greg Palast, our buddy, our pal. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Steph. Chris,
you know,
by the way, do you think corporate donations will allow Republicans to breed more?
I think so.
Exactly.
It's a flavin.
And do we have to watch?
You know,
let's hope not,
but not with their own lives.
Believe it to you, Greg. I mean, you know, we were all struck initially by the awfulness of the Supreme Court decision, you know, for obvious reasons that people go, oh, yeah, that's what we really needed was more corporate cash dirtying up our elections. But you write a great piece about what else it means. You write, you know, in today's Supreme Court's decision, the court ruled that corporations should be treated the same as natural persons, i.e. humans. In that case, expect the Supreme Court to next rule that Walmart can run for president. The court's decision is far, far more dangerous to U.S. democracy. Think Manchurian candidates. I'm losing sleep over the millions or billions of dollars that could flood into our elections from, you know, you mentioned the Saudi Oil Corporation's U.S. unit, from the maker of New Order Fashions, the Chinese People's Liberation Army, Bin Laden Construction Corporation, on and on, right?
Exactly. I mean, people are worried about corporate money like Exxon in our elections. They're already there. J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, these guys loaded the last election up. Exxon has opened up its corporate coffers. We know these guys.
Right.
What is not being discussed is the ones you don't know about. You're talking about, like I say, I called up Ted Olson's office, by the way. He's the guy that argued for allowing unlimited corporate donations into the U.S. elections. His wife was killed.
Wrong side of that issue. He's on the right side of the gay marriage issue. But anyway,
yeah,
go ahead.
You know, so he's a higher, you know, he's real wrong on this one, and because he said corporations should have unlimited power to donate. And I said, since his wife was killed in the September 11th attacks, well, if Al-Qaeda spends $20 and incorporates in Delaware, how much money should Al-Qaeda be allowed to donate to Sarah Palin's campaign? I mean, the and this is no joke. In other words, for $20, you incorporate in Delaware, and you get, first of all, we already have U.S. units of the foreign banks, the Chinese People's Liberation Army, which makes clothes for Walmart, as I said, under the New Order label, Aramco. China has $2 trillion of U.S. assets, U.S. dollar bills, $2 trillion. If they spent just a tenth of 1% of that, $2 billion, to protect their investment, you don't think the $2 billion from China would have an effect on our campaign, on our electoral process? Forget all the little nickels and dimes that people gave to Obama on, you know, the kind of PayPal.
Well, you talk about, right, that would be gone. You say, you know, he certainly would not have won without the astonishing outpouring of donations from 2 million Americans. It was an unprecedented uprising by PayPal overwhelming the old fat cat sources. And you're saying, you know, you kiss the small donor revolution goodbye, right?
Yeah, and it is not the big corporations, because, see, right now they're already in there. But, see, there's a big difference. The way they do it now is through PACs. So everyone from Exxon who gives money still has to put down their name and how much they put in. When they bundle money, by the way, Obama took no PAC money, but he took bundled money, you know, like bundles of checks from corporations. But every check had a name on it, and they were U.S. citizens. So how much do you think Pablo Escobar will spend in the next election?
Mm-hmm.
Through, you know. Well, he's not allowed to donate, but Escobar Inc. or Charles Manson, Blood Bank Incorporated can donate.
Well, you know, and you point out, I mean, it's interesting. You know, the right wing's always supposed to be the tough on, you know, a terror crowd and all that. Well, you know, it was, according to Bill O'Reilly, crazy liberal judicial activist Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You point out it was the first concern she raised. She asked about opening the door to mega corporations owned by foreign governments.
Exactly. And so Olson, who didn't want any restrictions because he has all these foreign corporate clients. Yeah, but this is not a small thing. I mean, we're worried, you know, about a couple million from Exxon, or we had, you know, $10-20 million raised by Enron when they were still around. That was poisonous for Bush. But that ain't nothing compared to what OPEC nations can raise. Do you realize the Saudis will no longer have to rent people like James Baker or Bush Sr.? They can simply create their own candidates. And you're talking,
You brought up China, who holds a $2 million mortgage on our treasury. They've raised concerns about the cost of Obama's health care. You know, you write, would our nervous Chinese landlords have an interest in buying the White House for an opponent of government spending such as Governor Palin?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they specifically, this is no joke, the Chinese, when they spoke to Obama, they didn't talk about Tibet or human rights or anything. They wanted to know what health care was going to cost them, because they have a mortgage on the United States of $2 trillion. They're afraid we're going to spend money on social services instead of paying them back. This is a big problem. The Chinese don't want us building up our economy. You know, they're the next wave. As far as they're concerned, we're past. And this is a big problem. If these guys can now donate billions, and I'm not talking millions anymore, I'm talking billions into campaigns, and we don't even know who they are. I mean, besides the Chinese Liberation Army working through New Order or Aramco, which is the Arabian oil company, the Saudis, you're going to have things like XYZ Corporation. Who are they? You know, suddenly something called XYZ is going to put in, you know, $500 million in a congressional race. And don't kid yourself, we never thought we'd have a $1 billion presidential election. We just had one. This money is just, no one is looking at this. No one is trying to figure out how to get around this. It's like I say, I'm not worried about Exxon anymore. They are already poisoning.
Well, you're saying, it could come down to a three-way battle between China, Saudi Arabia, and Goldman Sachs in our future elections.
Exactly. It's like a bidding process. I mean, we'll have nothing to do with it. I mean, this is now open to the planet. To the new billionaires of the planet, the new trillionaires of the planet, the oil billionaires, the Chinese, you know, maybe the Burmese junta needs a couple senators. Who knows? I mean, you know, at the moment, you know, you're talking about open seats in places like South Dakota, where it used to be a couple hundred thousand dollars, a few million dollars would change the race. What if someone dumps in $100 million into South Dakota? How do you respond to that? You know, forget it. You can give your nickel.
Yeah, it really
bond.
Is. That's it really is breathtaking. Now. Yeah, well, Greg, you know, I mean, like you say, you investigate, what was it, Triad was the name of it, right?
Yes.
It was behind the Newt Gingrich, all those seats. And
yes.
that technically would be legal now, what they were able to hide back then.
Well, let me just give in a couple sentences. What happened was, you know, everyone talks about the Gingrich Revolution in 1994 when Newt Gingrich took over the Democrats under Clinton, had control of Congress. Clinton's entire program was destroyed when Gingrich came in with a Republican majority. That Republican majority was created by something called Triad Corporation, which dumped $25 million, and that time was big, big money, into the last 48 hours of the campaign running smear ads against Democrats in key races. $25 million switched a half dozen races, and that switched control of Congress, and that's destroyed the Clinton presidency. He could do nothing after that. Now, at that time, congressional investigators were trying to find out who is Triad, because corporations, it's illegal for corporations to give money. The connection clearly went back to these right-wing fruitcakes billionaires, the Koch brothers, but they could never prove it. But it would have been jail time for them. Now, they would just get a plaque from the Republican National Committee. This is going to be what was illegal poisonous money will now be completely legal. We're decriminalizing secret donations. We're decriminalizing foreign donation. We're decriminalizing criminal donations. How much do you think the Mexican drug cartel will pay to take over the governorship of California?
Greg, thanks for unpeeling another layer, as you always do. The book is The Best Democracy Money Can Buy by Greg Palast. Greg, thanks as always for your time.
You're the best, Stephanie. Bye.
You too. There he goes. Oh.
He likes you.
He likes me. Okay, so we will. We were talking before the break about health care and what Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi are trying to do next. We will tell you all about that and what we think as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
If you turn her on, she'll turn you on.
Oh, God.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The hour, the Dow is up 31 points, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere, Jeff in Salem, Massachusetts. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Jeff.
Well, Happy New Year, everyone. It's been a long time since I've called in. How are you guys doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Excellent. Well, first of all, I wanted to tell you, listening to your show via the podcast is like psychotherapy for me.
Thank you. Only $4.95 a month if you buy it in advance. Thank you.
Absolutely, and I do. And I get to explore issues. I get the virtual event, and it's a 40-minute hour.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay, where's the joke? Where's that? Right, anyway. Scott Brown, that whole thing was a mess for me. One of the big, first of all, I want to tell you, I actually knew Scott Brown a long time ago. I went to Tufts, and so did he, at the same time. And one really interesting thing is that I music directed a show that he was in.
We did really?
Yeah.
He likes to pose nude, and he likes show tunes.
I know, there's something off about that, isn't there? It's very interesting that he was hero in a production of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
That's a weird fun fact.
Absolutely true. Anyway, but the whole problem I have here is that the media did a terrible job nationally and locally of covering the issues. And you know, what the national media thinks it's a referendum on health care and all that kind of stuff. But really, it's Massachusetts was just completely hates the Democrats.
Democratic Party here when nothing gets done. So they were, you figure that Martha Coakley was up by like 20 or 30 points just, you know, a few weeks before the election. So she had it in her hand. So something went down big time. And nobody mentioned things like...
I think she was asleep at the switch, and so was, the White House and the Democratic, party.
Yeah, did you know that he offered an amendment a couple of years ago to allow health care providers who had religious objections to avoid providing emergency contraceptive services? Did you know that?
I think I had heard that, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Did that get covered? And, I'm just wondering, how do we get the mainstream media to do their job?
Because
if they had done it, he would never have gotten elected. This guy's a right-wing, essentially whack job. But
yeah.
Yep, I hear you. All right, honey, thanks for calling.
But there's also those places where the votes were counted by hand where Martha Coakley won. At by the same rate by which Brown won in the Diebold precincts. I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
So top White House aides downplaying the Massachusetts loss. They appear to contradict. There was a little disagreement. Valerie Jarrett was basically saying, they're Democrats in the White House have been working on the art of the possible. David Axelrod dismissed the suggestion that the current health care bill is dead. So Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, we were talking about this before the break, are considering a list of changes to the Senate bill in hopes of making it acceptable to liberal House members. The changes could be included in separate legislation that, if passed, would pave the way for House approval of the Senate bill, a move that, that would preserve, obviously, the president's essential health plan. The move comes with political risk because it could open Democrats to charges that they pressed ahead with roughly the same health care bill that voters appeared to reject in Massachusetts. How many times can it be said, Jim, they didn't reject the health care bill in Massachusetts.
No.
They already have health care.
Exactly.
That Scott Brown voted for. So, that's the only thing we don't need out of Massachusetts. It's Democrats that are bigger pusses.
Right.
The leaders are considering making limited changes that can be passed on reconciliation, which I don't understand why you would do it any other way at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But all right. David Axelrod also said President Obama moving swiftly to recover from his worst week in the White House, speeding up his schedule for engaging in the 2010 races, planning to use his State of the Union to show the public a feisty side. There it is. He vowed there will be no reinventing, though, of the president. Even though Washington loves a shake-up or human sacrifice, there's no need to. We're governing through difficult times. There's a sense of impatience and frustrations about the state of the economy, but also about how the nature of Washington works. That was true in 2008. It's true now. The president is as determined to deal with those things as he was then. At least he admitted. He said everyone should acknowledge that we kind of took Massachusetts for granted and we shouldn't have. It reminded us that we've got to be at the top of our game, and get good candidates. I mean, Jim, I don't... I just think Martha Coakley was a bad candidate, and
that was certainly part of it.
Yeah.
She had less life than Mel Carnahan
when he ran.
What? Sorry.
David Plouf wrote, the Massachusetts vote is a resounding wake-up call, but concluded if Democrats will show the country we can lead when it's hard, we may not have perfect election results, but November will be nothing like the nightmare that the talking heads have forecast.
Unless we
use... He said his mantra whenever the Obama campaign hit a rough patch, no bedwetting. I like that. No bedwetting, Democrats. Don't panic.
Just saying, if it's being run with Diebold and ES&S machines and there are no exit polls, this is going to keep happening.
Well, how that would have happened and only Republican benefited in Massachusetts then. I mean, I just think she ran a bad campaign.
Well, that's true.
And I think he won fair and square in that particular.
I don't know that that's true.
Okay. All right. We were talking to Greg Palast, by the way, before the break about the Supreme Court ruling. Guess who's coming out against the, as John Fugelsang calls it, the SCOTUS ruling, because it's only the five conservative.
Who?
Some corporations.
Really?
How about that? In response to the Supreme Court's decision, dozens of current and former corporate executives from corporations including Delta, Ben & Jerry's, Crate & Barrel, sent a letter to Congress asking it to immediately pass the Fair Elections Now Act, which would publicly finance all congressional campaigns. They're basically saying, we're tired of these candidates calling us. Roughly 40 executives from these companies wrote a letter urging them to approve public financing for House and Senate campaigns. They say they're tired of getting fundraising calls from lawmakers and fear will only get worse after the Supreme Court ruling. Members of Congress already spend too much time raising money from large contributors, they wrote. which is true. When are they going to get down to the business of actually helping the American people? They spend so much money now, you know, fundraising, that it's hard to believe that they're going to have to spend more of their time doing that.
People are mumbling about putting together a constitutional amendment now.
Check this out. According to polling, November 2008, 69, that's almost 70, Jim. Mm-hmm. Almost 70% of the American people support publicly financing all campaigns.
Yep. Might be time to do that.
And meanwhile, Grampy McSame says the campaign finance reform is dead for now. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Much like his...
he used to before that.
Yes, he did. He said, I don't think there's much that can be done in the short term. The court has spoken, asked if reform efforts were dead for now. He said, I think so. Yeah, John McCain was originally for everything that he was then against in this last election, wasn't he? You know, I mean, there's no way to spin it that, you know, they know it's better for the Republican Party, and it's so disingenuous to unions can give too. Like unions have anywhere near the cash that, you know,
give up your pensions.
What's that?
Just give up your pensions and gut your own union, and then they'll be great. You've contributed all your money. So
29 minutes after the hour, back with the latest on the economy as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I'm red-faced and sweaty because I have had two glasses of wine and my taste banks are squeezing the life out of me.
34 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. Frank in St. Paul, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Frank.
Is it okay if I just kind of gush a little bit about Saturday night?
Yes,
please.
We've got
to get this out of our system here. There's a lot of happy people after what... the big event. And
it was a bash, wasn't it? Good time was had by all, as they say.
And we had, like, Hollywood visited us. I mean, for anyone, if you get a chance to see Mama in person, she is stunning.
Drunk. I thought you were going to say drunk. Okay, no. Thank you.
No, you thank weren't you. Drunk, but you were drinking wine.
Yes, I was.
I did notice
I blame my handlers. They kept shoving wine into my hand.
But you need more handlers, apparently, so that you stay away from light poles.
Yes, I did. There was a pole dancing incident that almost ended in tragedy, and Mama apologizes, Minneapolis.
So that was great. And also, Wendy Schultz, she's golden in glows. That was another thing. I mean, the visual is hard to get across.
She's the greatest thing. She handles all. She helped me print my ticket because, you know me, Chris, with technological things.
You're kind of dumb.
Yes.
Yeah.
she has to take care of all, not just Ed, but all the liberal hosts.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, honey. Aww. Thanks for coming.
He put everybody up on a pedestal. I'm not sure that that's reality.
Who, what? Wendy?
No,
oh, no,
you.
She's the greatest.
Wendy's a looker.
Yeah, Wendy's a looker, but you?
Oh, Wendy's. Yeah, no, yeah, me?
Yeah.
I'm under the pedestal. Let's go to Von Ciel in Nashville. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Von Ciel.
Hey, everybody. I want to borrow your airwaves to send out a plea.
Okay.
One, to Dr. Drew to please fly to South Carolina and perform an intervention on the entire state. These people are in an abusive relationship with their elected officials. Yes, I know they elected them, but it's like you picked that bad boyfriend, you know?
Right, yeah.
So
yeah.
Please, somebody.
They have bad taste in men.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But you know what, Von Ciel?
Yes.
North Carolina is spooning South Carolina on the map.
Exactly.
Yes.
I live way too close. And we are already trying to wipe the John Edwards off us. So, please. Use your immense celebrity power that you have.
Yeah,
now.
How many? Who knew how many layers of dirtbag there were to John Edwards? Dear God!
I mean, they are stinking up the joint. It's awful.
All right,
so
thank
please
you,
use your celebrity power. Call on someone. Maybe Representative James Clyburn could do this.
All right, there you go. Thank you, Mike. Let me call on my awesome celebrity power, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Dear.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get Lily Tomlin on the phone.
What? The fine American Lily Tomlin?
We love Lily Tomlin. What
the Stephanie Miller Show in the new Time magazine is being her favorite radio program. Thank you, Lily.
Yes.
What did she call us?
Well, she called us a band of merry-making mischief monkeys. That's Jim and me.
Let's see. Radio Day. Stephanie Miller is commentator, comic mama, and her irreverent two-man band of merry-making mischief monkeys get me laughing every morning. You two monkeys.
She likes alliteration a lot.
Listen, they don't give those Emmys and Pulitzers and things out to anybody, Jim. Wow. You've got to have exquisite taste.
Lily Tomlin knows I exist. Wow. That's kind of cool.
You're such a geek.
I know.
All right. Dave in Minneapolis, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Stephanie. So nice to meet you at the party there the other night.
Thank you.
It was awesome, and you were so gracious to everybody that came up and wanted to talk to you, and we thank you for that. And
oh, you're welcome. I know a lot of people, many people disappointed that I'm not exactly the slutty drunk that had been promised, and I apologize.
Yeah, I was offering to help you spoon here in Minneapolis, but you just didn't seem to be up to it, you know.
All right, thank you, Dave. Dave in Atlanta on the Supreme Court ruling. Hi, Dave. Hello, Dave.
Oh, somebody got to him.
He just hung up.
Uh-oh. Chris in Sacramento. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I was actually thinking back a couple years ago. Wasn't it the Republicans that were wanting to do away with the filibuster because the Democrats wouldn't fall in line and pass their legislation? And I was just sitting there like, God, get rid of it, please. It's going to bite them in the butt later when they're in the minority. So I think maybe the Democrats should, like, replace, you know, C-SPAN where they were threatening to get do away with the filibuster and go, oh, should we do that again? Maybe we should really get rid of that. And, you know, if you don't want to pass health care, let's just get rid of that filibuster.
Thank you, Chris. No, thank you for calling. I mean, it can't be said enough.
Mm-hmm.
They passed stuff that was crappy for the country, like all Bush's tax cuts for the top 1% through reconciliation. And it's like we forget. Now it's like, oh, that'd be the most egregious affront to democracy ever.
Simple majority. That's communistical.
Oh, Orrin Hatch was in a brief edition of
Right-wing hypocrites.
He did it to have to admit, Jim, that, oops, yeah, a lot of things weren't paid for exactly in the Bush years when the Republicans ran Congress.
Like two wars?
Yeah. When the Bush administration in 2003 was projecting a budget deficit of $475 billion, the Republican-controlled Congress passed that Medicare prescription drug fiasco that raised the deficit by $395 billion. Republicans have attacked the cost, of course, of health care reform, even though the bill with the best chance of passage would reduce the deficit by $132 billion over 10 years and $1.3 trillion over 20 years. So Andrea Mitchell pressed Hatch on the hypocrisy of Republicans all of a sudden getting religion about paying for everything. Hatch replied it wasn't right that they didn't pay for the legislation, but it was understandable. He's talking about the Medicare prescription.
Mm-hmm.
He said because they were, quote, trying to solve a problem for millions of Americans.
Unlike the Obama administration.
Health care? What the hell is that? He said, well, in those days, a lot of things weren't paid for, and that wasn't right. I have to admit that. On the other hand, we were trying to solve a problem for millions of Americans who were unable to get their drugs.
Okay, then.
So that's why we had to give a giant giveaway to the drug companies. What?
The facts of a liberal bias.
Ah, I'll tell you what. All right, so the president out talking about the economy and jobs this weekend, President Obama.
Today, because we took those actions, the worst of this economic storm has passed. But families like yours and communities like this one are still reeling from the devastation that left in its wake.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I was mentioning this, and Ed and I were talking about this over the weekend, that, you know, they keep saying, oh, we should have focused on the economy first. Well, he did. I mean, you know, that's the thing that people forget is because things are still so bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pretty much every economic expert is saying we were saved from another depression, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
He did pass the stimulus. It is adding jobs. You can dispute the number, but it has saved or created a bunch of jobs. It's, you know, we're impatient, which I understand, you know, because if you're not the one that got a job, then, you know, I understand. But at any rate, the president talking about...
we're having a fight right now because I want to charge Wall Street a modest fee to repay taxpayers in full for saving their skins in a time of need.
Yeah.
We want our money back.
Yeah.
And hello, did anyone forget? George Bush is the one that started the bank bailouts.
Yep.
And again, a lot of the stuff that the president's had to do, I granted, not kind of distasteful. I understand it's a populist thing to go, oh, why did we do that for the banks? And why did we do, you know, but it probably did pull us back from the brink. But he's right to say we want our money back now. You know, that's the problem is now you got to change the way business is done. You can't have these companies getting taxpayer money and then continue to take these bonuses. Mm-hmm. The president.
So long as I have some breath in me, so long as I have the privilege of serving as your president, I will not stop fighting for you. I will take my lumps, but I won't stop fighting to bring back jobs here. I won't stop fighting for an economy where hard work is rewarded. I won't stop fighting to make sure there's accountability in our financial system. I'm not going to stop fighting until we have jobs for everybody.
So I want to get your guys' take on Bernanke, because it looks like he's going to get confirmed at this point, right? Mm. I mean,
barely.
Yeah, I mean, the problem, well, you know, you have people like, well, Jeff Sessions, Republican of Alabama.
He was a part of the Federal Reserve Board and then chairman of it when this economic crisis hit us and devastated us financially and economically. He did not warn against that.
Right, and then you have people on the other side of this issue like Senator Chuck Schumer of New York.
He did do a very, very good job during the rescue efforts, which could have led, if they didn't happen, to the Great Depression. So I'm supportive of Bernanke, but will continue to be a very strong critic of the Fed in areas where I disagree.
And you also have people like Barbara Boxer, who has
Feingold, I know, but
who have come out against...
This is the problem, though. It's like where we are now, because basically what economists are saying, the defeat of Bernanke... could raise the risk of a double-dip recession if political jousting over successor were to drag on for months. And again, just what the Republicans want. They want the economy to get worse. They want. I mean, right. It just... So Bernanke's prospects appeared to brighten yesterday. I think Mitch McConnell predicted he'd be confirmed, among others. Still, the chances of his defeat has unsettled Wall Street, contributing to last week's 4% loss of by the Dow Jones, its worst performance in 10 months. If Bernanke were rejected, uncertainty for over a successor could roil global markets. So anxiety along with sagging investments could cause consumers and businesses to cut spending, according to economists. Joblessness, which is bad, could worsen, you know. And I've heard, I can't remember which economist, say that, you know, Jim, it may be a lot worse than even the number says, you know. I mean, certainly in many parts of the country, it's way above 10. Oh, yeah. So, you know, they're saying that the recovery might fail. So that's the position we're in now, is Bernanke, you know, almost like, don't you think both of those things are true? What Sessions and Schumer said are true.
I'm just wondering why the Fed has so much power. I mean, maybe we should rethink that.
Right.
That maybe elected leaders should have a little more say in what goes on.
Right. But, you know, one top economist said it'll become more acute if there are delays in confirming its successor. The economic recovery remains fragile. I think we all know that, with spending still weak, credit tight, job creation scarce. His confirmation, which had seemed assured, was suddenly thrown into doubt when resistance grew among Senate Democrats. Bernanke is widely credited with helping to prevent the Great Recession from turning into the Second Great Depression, but his support of Wall Street bailouts during the height of the crisis has angered people obviously struggling with the unemployment and foreclosures. Backlash from Democrats over Bernanke's role in the bailouts intensified after Democrats suffered the loss in Massachusetts. See, that's the problem. I don't want, you know, Democrats to just try to make a point now because they're overreacting about Massachusetts and what could actually hurt the recovery, you know, because that's the problem. Now I'm afraid Democrats are also going to look to just do whatever's politically.
Right. Or they'll draw the wrong lessons from it, you know.
Right, exactly. Like health care. Like, oh, we need to have a more watered down health care bill. That's the lesson there.
Don't listen to what they're saying on Fox. Don't. That's probably the opposite of what you should be.
Yes, do whatever they say. Do the opposite of whatever Fox says. All right, 46 minutes after the hour. What's next for the Democratic Party? Celebrity Stack and much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is not normal.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
51 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Joanne in Massachusetts on the healthcare mess. Hello, Joanne.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
I keep hearing that, oh, we don't care because we have health insurance. But if you go into the online and try to buy health insurance, there's nothing that's a deal. Everything, the cheapest thing that comes up when you finally put in your zip code, you have to put in your age. You have to tell them whether or not you take medication before anything even comes up. So half these people, they don't even respond back to you. You put in your age. They want to know if you've been hospitalized in the past 5 years. They want to know if you have had DUI in the past 5 years. And then it will give you these options. $500 is the cheapest one.
Mm-hmm.
There's many people that cannot afford $500, but they make you buy it in Massachusetts. That's part of the reason people don't want health care, even in Massachusetts.
Well,
they don't want to be forced to buy it.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, I agree with you about, you know, the mandate is a bad idea without meaningful competition. You know,
exactly.
I mean, that's why Medicare for All would have been simpler, like we keep saying. You know, the only thing you'd have to answer, are you a human that needs health care? And you would say, yes. And they'd be like, okay, welcome in. Welcome.
The options
Thank you.
They give you are about $10 apart in price. That's it.
Yep. Okay. All right, honey. Thank you. You know, a lot of stories, obviously, about the supposed demise of the Democratic Party and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm
blah,
sick of those.
Blah. Republicans will have to fight one set of numbers, the large number of voters who simply don't like the brand the GOP is selling. You know, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, the Wall Street Journal NBC News poll found only 30% of those surveyed had a favorable view of Republicans.
Oh, well.
That's 8 points lower than the favorability rating for Democrats and 22 points lower than Obama.
The Wall Street Journal is practically Pravda. You going to believe those commies?
Ah. But you know what I mean? Before we get all dispirited and, oh, it's all over. Even Republicans aren't thrilled with Republicans. A CBS News poll showed only 55% of Republicans hold a favorable view of their congressional delegation. Scott Brown didn't really even run as a Republican, one pollster noted. He ran as an outsider. Republicans gleefully proclaiming the death of the Obama presidency released his agenda. How about this number, though? The Wall Street Journal NBC poll found 65% feel that Obama inherited the economic mess, while only 17% say his policies were responsible for the current situation. So, you know, I don't think it's too late to take back the debate. Even Huckabee, by the way, says Obama will be reelected. He said, I'd want to be careful to not let Republicans get too giddy about this. He said that this will probably be the beginning of the reelection of Barack Obama because he's going to have to make course corrections that will likely put him in a much better position in his reelection. One Republican said voters have fallen out of love with the Democrats. They haven't fallen back in love with us. So do you know what I'm saying, Jim? Like, you know, it ain't over till it's over, you know? And it's
I think that was also Huckabee trying to, you know, rile up the base.
Sure.
Yeah, well, of course.
Yeah.
He's the Huckabump.
Well.
All right. Those pesky folks at Newsbusters, Chris, they've...
Have they busted the news again?
Yes, they've busted someone on liberal radio for liberal bias again.
What?
Oh, boy.
Damn it, they got
boy,
me in their crosshairs
so
again.
Smart that way.
This is, they busted me and David Schuster by completely misconstruing something he said. MSNBC's David Schuster on Monday said if Fox News host Glenn Beck's house were to catch fire, the fire department should let it burn down. No. That's not what he said.
Oh,
such was discussed on Stephanie Miller's radio program in a segment hysterically about so-called crazy things said by conservatives. And then I did an actual quote here. Miller noted, Glenn Beck actually said the president is dividing the nation by reacting too quickly to the Haiti situation, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
Am
yes.
I correct?
Yes.
Schuster jumped all over the setup like a grizzly on a salmon.
A what?
Grizzly bear on a
right,
salmon.
Well, I got it, but that's not the first metaphor.
So then
they
do note what David Schuster said. He said, well, you know, maybe God forbid, he did say God forbid, you know, Glenn Beck's house would ever collapse because of some disaster or burn because of some fire. If that's his attitude, then maybe the fire department ought to think twice about putting out the fire. Maybe he can be on his own and see if his radio listeners want to come and with the hoses or something. So he didn't say, I hope his house burns down. He was making an analogy.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
They're a bit screechy and strident over there at Newsbusters, aren't they?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You're screechy and strident.
Rather
you're the one in defensive. We're not defensive.
They're also rather humorless, kind of like Bill Bennett.
Yeah.
All right. Breaking news in the celebrity stack, Jim. Gary Coleman arrested for domestic violence again.
Oh, boy.
because of a warrant stemming from a prior incident. You remember, we've discussed the prior incident here on the Stephanie Miller Newscast.
Yes, we have.
He threw a printer at his wife, Jim posited that perhaps it was one of those...
travel printers.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a Canon mini printer, because he's...
He weighs about as much as a printer.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. That we know it's not all-in-one printer.
Exactly. No, like, maybe she had Canon, like, the imprint on her forehead or something.
No knock.
Maybe it was a little photo printer. You know how you can get those little photo printers now?
Right.
Yeah.
That's probably what it was.
Okay.
There you go. Conan O'Brien ended his run on the Tonight Show on Friday. Did you see he played with Will Ferrell and ZZ Top guitarist Billy Gibbons? They played in a rendition of Freebird.
Hmm. Oh, wow. I missed it. Damn.
The ratings for that were huge. You got like a seven share or something like that.
By the way, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Jim, going edgy again. They hired Jay Leno to do a...
Yeah. I'm not going to hear anything political. Yeah, I'm going to stick to safe things, but not like I normally do at my edgy Kenny Fox show.
After Wanda Sykes last year, I think it's...
Then they go safe. See, then they go to Rich Little.
Exactly.
They have Bill Maher, then they go to Rich
Little. Ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Carter.
Here's another, oh dear God, another breaking news. It's not really breaking news. Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie have reportedly planning a split. They're believed to have signed legal documents earlier this month with the plan to split up in the near future.
What does Jen think about it?
I've always been team Jen. Maybe that'll still work out.
I don't care anymore. I really don't.
Sean Penn visited a medical clinic, toured a food distribution site, and passed out water as he sought to get a first-hand glimpse in Haiti. You know, you've got to hand it to him. Mm-hmm. He was down in Hurricane Katrina actually fishing people out of the water.
Yep.
You know, unlike the dopes on Fox that always criticize him, they didn't even carry the telethon for
FEMA couldn't get in there, but Sean Penn could.
Yeah, exactly. Good for him. Good for him. All right, that's it for us today. Who's tomorrow? Who's coming up tomorrow? Did I miss that? Charlie Pierce of the Boston Globe and Carol Leifer.
That's right.
Oh. All right, so don't miss a minute. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.